Well done. Well done.
Why are you saying well
Question record.
done? Patronizing start to this podcast.
How should I?
Whoa, 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 whoa. Wait a minute. Wait a bleeding minute. You know, if I end the Facebook, will it end the live? I
Oh.
don't. It should be okay. It should be okay. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. I'll deal with it. Go on then. Hit me.
How should I approach previous cold leads for my group program? I have a load of Facebook contacts that expressed interest and I've messaged about previous intakes without reply. How can I warm them up and not just send another salesy message about joining the intake?
Two ways that I would look at this. Probably A, going out and just having a normal human conversation, open question. Hi, how are you? Whatever you talked about last time or whatever you discussed or whatever you know about them, pick that back up. That type of stuff. So yeah, picking up normal day-to-day conversation. Another one is potentially if you've got maybe a lead magnet coming up that you feel is similar to how they ended up on that. As a warm lead in the past, maybe sharing that with them. So that might be a good idea. So just checking in, just making sure, A, first of all, asking how you are. B, just to let you know, I've got this coming in a couple of weeks for all of the people who've expressed that they need a bit of a support in that area in the past. I'll fire it your way and let me know if you have any questions about it. That type of stuff, really, yeah, relaxed way of picking stuff back up like that. I think more so that the open question, the normal day-to-day conversation, I think would be important just to get chatting because it's about relationships in it, especially if you've tried to sell to them a couple of times. Anything you would add to that, Nicholas? Michael Hanley.
No, I agree in regards to that approach. I think leading up to when the deadline is, I think don't be put off by being salesy either a little bit. Because you are selling. And I think when we have that mindset sometimes that personally, I feel it's almost got to feel that way a little bit because otherwise I don't think you're going to be asking for it clearly enough. You know what I mean? No, I think obviously I know who this is, so I know the plans that they've got in regards to the frequency of emails. I think make sure you have some really clear calls to action on every email, and it might not be about the program specifically, but just make sure you're inviting people to do something with the information and support you're giving them. Apart from that,
Your answer is that boring. I yawned three times.
well, I didn't even listen to yours, so you might have said already things I already said. I just agree with you.
What's the common mistake when making a lead magnet? What is a common mistake when making a lead magnet?
Focusing on what it is way too much than what it's going to help people with. So I think common mistakes are going, oh, should it be a program? Should it be an accountability group? Should it be a download? Should it be a calorie calculator? I think all of them work, but all of them work only for the relevant people and how you're understanding the problem that you're trying to solve for that person with that lead magnet. So that's the first thing. The second thing is it needs to be quick, it needs to be simple, it needs to be convenient, and you can't ask people to do too many things. Like the timeline of someone getting something and using it and seeing a return from it needs to be quick. It can't be kind of really, really long-winded, in my opinion, when you're trying to create fresh new leads into the business. If they're already existing, leads, then maybe you would extend that and give it a little bit more. So yeah, that's the two biggest mistakes I see consistently is focusing on the what instead of what it's going to solve and making it super simple and quick and efficient. And the add-on to that is if you're not, this is a bit of a strange one actually. If you're not excited about it in a way that you can't, like, you're passionate about it helping someone solve that problem. It's not that you're not passionate about or excited. It's not that the lead magnet itself gets you excited. It's about the problem that you're trying to solve that exciting you and motivating you to get it out there. I think that's a big one. I think that's a big one. What's your thoughts on that?
Agree.
Well, I thought you would. You know what I mean? What is the best way to take leads received through a giveaway, Facebook ad, etc., through a kind of process of elimination so you end up with a smaller bunch of people at each stage and finish with a list who are more likely to buy?
Offer them something. Really simply, like if they've come through a giveaway, whatever was, I know the front end giveaway was small group PT space on this giveaway, on this marketing campaign. So the next bit is if they don't win, then offer them something. So you, I know this person's doing it already with the trial. And if it's not the trial, then I would offer them something that is a part of your small group coaching, because that's what they want. That will solve a problem for them. So, for argument's sake, them replying or them filling something in or getting a download of a program or getting access for a video of what it is and all of that type of stuff. So, I offer them something, whether it's the trial, whether it's a program, whether it's access to your waiting list for the next trial, offer them something for them to put their hands up and go, yes, mate, I am interested. Know what I'm saying, Nick?
Yes, mate.
Are you interested?
No.
Would you add anything to that?
No.
Did you get? What advice would you give to someone starting a mailing list? And would you say one email a week is enough to show knowledge and value to potential clients? Good.
First thing is get clear on what you're going to send people consistently so that you then can give them a reason to join your mailing list. And again, a mailing list is a lead magnet, isn't it? It's to gather leads and nurture them. So get clear on what you want to provide people with. Is it one email enough
Oh,
a
stop that.
week?
Yeah.
I think 1 to 2 emails a week is going to be ideal. And I think you've got to be really consistent with the times that you do. If you're sending, I wouldn't say infrequent, but if you're sending like 1 every 7 days or 2 every 7 days, I think try and stick to a time where people can then be conditioned to receiving that. So whether that's a curation email or a weekly roundup at the end of each week, whether that's a midweek story lesson offer email, whether it's a midweek spur type of email. Yeah, I think the first thing is, yeah, understanding what you're going to provide people with. I think the second thing is what we're speaking about is about lead magnets, having a good lead magnet that can draw people in and onto your mailing list. Anything you'd add?
No.
Do you just swear at me or just put two fingers up for any particular reason?
Just wanted to ask the next question, get on with.
When a client leaves, I have an overwhelming feeling of a failure. like I've not done enough or that I'm not good at my job, etc. How can I overcome this to make sure it doesn't affect other areas of my business?
Really good question. I think normalize it. Most people go through it. It shows that you care and you give a shit. But what I would say is that there's two ways I'd look at this. Is A, I'd take your feelings and I would use them to learn from and look at what you felt in your experience was the reason why they've left and all of that type of stuff. So just dig into it. What's the purpose? What's the reason? What could you have done better on your from your feelings? But I would definitely look at the facts, right? There's a lot of coaches that we speak to go, oh, I feel like shit because I've lost a client. And then we go, how long's that client been with you? And then they've been with you like 6, 9 months, 12 months. Clients are going to leave. You need to get your head around that. And everyone listening does. It's a fact. Clients are going to leave. Does that mean it lets you off the hook in terms of if you've not done your job to its probably to its capacity in terms of standards and results? Well, no, but you should be able to learn from it. Hence why I said before about the feelings. So I would look at the facts first. So how long has the client been with me? How did I take that client on into my business? What did the client come for in terms of outcomes and results? How would I say, like, have they achieved them outcomes and results? If not, why not? And instead of pointing the finger at the client in that sense, take yourself down a bit of a rabbit hole of going, what could I have done better? And maybe look at them points and look at adapting the service or the process or how you approach that for moving forward. So learn from it. But I would look at both the facts and the feelings. And to the second part of the question, how can I overcome this to make sure it doesn't affect other areas of my business? I think I've just answered that, actually. I think I accept clients are going to leave. Except you probably got a lesson in every single client that does leave. But instead of going off feelings and emotions so much in the future, look at the things that you could assess to go off the facts to give you peace of mind that it shouldn't affect other areas of the business. Any of that that you want to dig into, Nick, that gives people more context?
No, I don't. No.
No, happy with that, yeah.
No, it's an average.
Happy with that, are you? Let me just refresh the form as it's not showing the question. What's your least favorite part of running a business?
Looking at you every day.
Fucking predictable wanker.
My least favorite part about running a business. Least. Oh, fuck. Paying tax. I hate it. I hate that.
Paying VAT, paying corporation tax, that is the worst part of the job.
That's it. That's heads and shoulders. Nothing that comes close to that.
Is there other parts of the job that we don't
I
like?
I fucking hate paying tax. I hate it.
And what other part of the job don't you like?
Don't I like? I really dislike, really dislike, really, really dislike. Don't think there's anything I really, actually, really dislike. I've obviously got more enjoyable things, but there's nothing where I'll go, I hate fucking doing that. There isn't actually. Which I think is a good sign. I fucking hate paying tax. I hate it. That pains me.
If you could remove one thing from the job, though, that you just never want to do again, what would it be?
I actually can't think of anything specific that coming up. Generally can't.
That's good then. Shows that you're in the right job, Nick. All right.
I also think that's because we do a mix of everything. I think that might be different if I was doing a lot of, if we was doing a lot of one specific thing, like 90% of my week was this one thing, I'd probably have a different answer to that.
What you're saying is you're a jack of all trades, master of fucking none. Next question. Let's go.
You shut your face.
Do
I'll
you still
move
put
on.
E on this podcast? It's an explicit.
I see. You're on it. What are your thoughts on taking risks and the idea of manifestation? It's a mouthful, that manifestation.
Think, listen, right? The idea of taking risks is clearly you should do it. Life's short, all of that bollocks. Take as many risks as possible, all of that. So the thought of it is great, right? I feel that probably as you get older and have more responsibilities, you probably end up taking, or you're more cautious of them risks. So if you were asking the question, if I was your age of the person who asked the question with no responsibilities, I would take as many fucking risks as possible. So that's my thoughts of taking risks. And yes, like at any, I suppose at any point in life, you should try and take a or take the risks because you'll obviously learn throughout doing them. So yeah, the thought of it. It sounds great and is great, and but I think it very much depends on you as a personality and where you're at in your life as to regards to how inspired you would be or to take that risk or risky and whatever. Anyway, I'm going to shut the fuck up now. And the idea of manifestation. See, Conor McGregor was big on manifestation, wasn't he? And he did really well to be the first UFC champion to ever do to win two world championships at two different weight class, but then he got knocked the fuck out multiple times. So it can't work that great, can it, Nick? So my thoughts are, listen, I think my advice would be off the back of that question, would be to invest the time into making like really big goals. Like if that's the case and you're looking for risk and working towards something that you've already always dreamed of and all of that, like get it down. And but more so get down how the fuck that you're gonna do it, because yeah, there's plenty of people that have all of these dreams and goals and all of that type of stuff, but in a lot of ways don't want to do the work. What was my post that time, Nick? Remember it? Coaches have a Dubai dream, but a Whitby work ethic. Remember that one? And that's so true. Like doing what some of the people have done that you might see and compare yourself against, and they've done really well, regardless of what it is. There's been lots of failure, lots of risk, and probably lots of absolute graft in terms of hours into it that have gone into that. So all I would say is do the same. Hopefully you can expect the same result off the back of it. But don't, yeah, I suppose don't leave it to hope. What are your thoughts on that question? I'm interested to see what your response would be.
I think have as much information as you can with opportunity. Because I was like literally from 20 something odd to 30, I would just take opportunities. Like obviously I traveled a hell of a lot and I looked at like working for CEOs, traveling around with them, going over to Bermuda. I had an opportunity once and working in a gym there, like all sorts of bits and pieces. But I guess the decision-making process, you're always going to have, no decision is going to be 100%. I think if you're waiting for that, you'll be waiting a fucking long time. But I think being able to weigh up the pros and cons is a really important part of the process, because there's never going to be pros, pros, pros all on one side. You're always going to have this risk versus reward balance. So, and the one thing I would say is that looking at those different opportunities, not all of the grass isn't always greener. That's the one thing I would say. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. But I think to judge that, think about where you're currently at. Think about what's important to you. Like when I was 16, someone put an idea in my head about traveling, and that dictated the next 15 years. And that was important to me. That was massively important to me. It was more important than staying at home with friends. It was more important than staying at home with family. That was the most important thing. So I think you'll have a good inkling of where your values lie, and I think let that guide you, but then also really weigh up the pros and cons, I would say. Definitely. Because change and the novelty of change, whether it's environment, work environments, living in situations, countries, weather, you get used to that novelty very quick. Very, very quick. Like, yeah, that's one thing I'd say. Or a few things I'd say. Or just what I'd say in general.
All right, Jesus Christ, we don't need a life story. Have you got any recommendations for bite-sized coaching learning? I like the look of Lane Norton's Reps magazine subscription. I think something I can read or listen to for 10 to 15 minutes per day to improve my knowledge and stay current with the latest research.
Honestly, I personally, I do that through podcasts more so. They're my go-to. I guess it depends on I guess it depends on where you what the areas of things you want to look into and want to improve yourself on, because it's so vast. Like, Examine's a very good website. That's a really good website, where it publishes a lot of research articles, really easy to read as well. So examine.com is very good. PubMed, but it's a bit more general, is very good. And podcasts, that for me, you get that kind of bite size, because sometimes digging into a whole book or a whole audio book, sometimes it takes me some time and I need some variance. So that's why I kind of tend to choose to podcast daily, but that's just me. Anything you'd
No, I do agree with the podcast stuff. It's just digging out the right one, isn't it, for you? I found myself stopped listening to it. I mean, the fitness industry ones. Actually listen to the ones that I want to listen to, if that makes sense. But yeah, I would say Reps, the Lane Norton one, the Eric Helms one, if that's still going. I was subscribed for that for ages, to be fair, but didn't do fuck all with it for a long time. Mass, it's called. Go and have a look at that or
He's
examine.
got the podcast, isn't he? He's got the 3D.
MJ, is that still going?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's just nudged me actually to go and have a butcher's. To go and have a look.
Just looking up.
Next question, Nick.
No, yeah, 3D Muscle Journey podcast. Sigma Nutrition Radio.
Oh, Sigma's good. Sigma's good.
Yeah. Complete Human Performance. Just looking at some of those. The No Nonsense Nutrition Podcast, but that stopped. That hasn't been done going for ages, actually. There's some old ones that actually haven't been updated for a while, looking at these on going down, but they're still relevant. James Layton, no. Yeah, try them first. I'll fucking sit here all day.
It's not about you and your podcast.
Shut the fuck up, from me.
Sort of
No
weapon.
one wants to hear your opinion. Shut up. I love automating the business as much as possible, but sometimes I feel like I'm missing that personal touch in the initial interactions when a new lead comes into the business, especially if cold. Have you come across any automations that can bring in more personal element? I'm thinking in particular voice messaging, simple hello via WhatsApp when someone comes in as a brand new lead in MailChimp or a video in MailChimp. I'm now riffing anything you have tested.
We haven't tested anything in regards to lead capture personalization, have we? So no, I understand the question though, in a sense of why you would want to do that. But I suppose this is less about automating the start of your business, isn't it? It's more so automating your marketing with a personal touch, isn't it? Which I think is a class idea. No, but maybe whatever that lead magnet is, maybe that is a quick video or voice message on the first one that they receive. So there is an element of automation to it, but you can personalize it with a bit of a thank you for the download. This is what to expect. Bang, I think it's a great shout. Especially if you're taking phone details. And you can do it automated via WhatsApp. What are your thoughts, Nick?
I'd agree. I think like the personal touch on because and also just for context, you're running a personal service, so you probably can have some sort of mini templates that you can like plug and play into WhatsApp for the personal touch element. I think that's a shout. The automations, I think, are running the background. The only other thing that, but it's no, not really. No, you can automate WhatsApp, so you could use Zapier. You could use Zapier to ping a message, with the trigger being maybe, if they're coming through an ad onto your MailChimp. Maybe there's a yeah, you could definitely do that. It's just I'm thinking of the route and the trigger. So yeah, but I also feel that the personal element of it is with the numbers that you do for the personal service you provide. I think it's doable.
Next question is, how do I get clients to engage more in client events such as meetup walks, etc.? I always think it would be great to get them to all meet, but I face a lot of resistance with them being busy with work, kids, etc. Is it just a case of giving more notice than a few weeks?
I mean, first of all, 100%. Giving like run it as an internal marketing campaign. I think that's a big thing, and it's definitely one thing we've learned from doing like in-person events and online events for over the past whatever how many years with our own business, and also like when we've ran it for. Companies we worked for before, like doing in-person events and bits and pieces, you've got to run it as like a marketing campaign. So I would definitely think about how you can market that to your clients. I definitely think giving more notice. I definitely think obviously them being a part of the process. I definitely think there being like a bit of a update towards the event as well. I definitely also feel like, when you think about marketing your service and selling your service or selling an idea or getting people signed up, like create scarcity, create demand, create that intrigue, that excitement. It's the same process in my opinion. And create that. Create that if you've got like if you just run an event and let's say I don't know 50% of your clients turn up, I think that's a bit of a win as well at the same time, but use that as a bit of FOMO for people, because that will help bring people to the table again. So yeah, anything to add?
Yep.
You think so? It's a fucking amazing answer. I worry a bit about my weekly one-to-one online client check-in feedback videos, Loom recordings in brackets. I think I go on too much, 10 to 20 minutes sometimes. I have tried to record short videos, but I do seem to keep chatting on. Haven't had any bad feedback from my clients about my feedback being too long. So it's not a massive worry. What would your thoughts be on this? Any advice on client weekly feedback in general? Thanks.
Listen, I think first of all, it's not necessarily a bad thing about how much you're putting into them, as long as the feedback is good, which I'm sure it is. So yes, it seems very long, in regards to how much you're getting out in, how much you're putting time-wise into that feedback. But I would judge that off a couple of things. The first one being, are they actually applying the feedback that you're providing, or is it kind of too long and being ignored? And the second thing is have you asked them in regards to their preference on that feedback? So are they essentially, both points are they taking it in and applying that information? And that's how I would measure the success of it, that alongside feedback from your surveys. So do a client survey, make that a question on the survey. In regards to how would they rate it, what would they improve? Yeah, all of that type of stuff. So I would get that information like as a tangible piece of feedback from your clients, not just their comments, or you assume because there's no bad feedback that they don't mind it. So get facts from it. All I would say is in regards to if you want to speed up that process, is that I would make sure that you read their check-in, so the process of it, and I'm not saying that this is the blueprint of it, but go through the process of it, of reading the check-in, take the person into consideration. So if the person you know is likes detail, likes bullet points and to the point, that type of stuff, likes a little bit more empathy, likes you being energetic and giving lots of kind of encouragement and also first and then getting them bought in that way, so taking the person's kind of personality type. And then I would deliver the feedback points based on that. So if I'm delivering it to someone who just likes it to the point, I'm just going bang, bang. I've read through it. These are my feedback points. Bang, bang, bang. Right. These are my points. There's a bit of context and it's gone. Then we might need a little bit more detail. I might do the video or shorten down the video and then send some text behind it as well to, again, to save a little bit more time. So it very much depends. I think what's important here is there is no blueprint. And anyone tells you there is a full of shit. It's about finding what's right for you, but more so your client in how they're going to take it in and apply it. So for me, I would get tangible feedback for your clients on that process, ways to improve, how much of it they apply is important stuff. And then making sure that you're actually preparing it properly. So when you read through, are you writing down them bullet points and the things that you want to get across? Or are you just waffling pure shit? Bit like I am now. And if you need to add to that, Nick,
What the fuck you just said?
it's important though. Like I'd also watch the webinar series that we've got on weekly check-ins about the feedback bit, because essentially I go into that in a little bit more detail, what I've just said. So that'll help. So there's my thoughts on that. And that's my feedback that I would give Nick. The next question is the one. What are the most important things to have or do to build community in your business? Great question. That good that Nick's yawning again, the fucking flannel.
What are the main warnings are? I think one of the most important things and help to find to try and build a community in your business is having everyone aligned with the ethos of how you work and what you do and how you coach and the belief that you have. I think that's a massive one, definitely, because if that's not aligned, people will have conflict, and generally they probably won't last in your business that long, right? That's the first thing. I think the second thing is creating a safe space. So allowing or creating the environment where people can feel open, honest, no judgment, is massive for to build a community where people feel like they can be themselves, where there's no fear of, like I said, judgment. So I think that is a massive one to set up. And, you know, simple things like, yes, celebrating wins, but also celebrating challenges and bringing the community together for challenges as well that people are going through, I think is a huge thing, because that'll create common ground. The obvious one where you set in environments where people can come together. Now, that doesn't have to be like monthly meetups or challenges or anything like that. It could be bringing people together on the testing week that you're doing online, if you're an online coach, for example, or the challenge that is directly aligned with like the collective goal that your clients are after. So I think the most important thing, personally, I think are the first two points, which is having that clear vision and mission that you're striving towards for your business. And I think creating a safe space, like going back and forth, like, should I do a WhatsApp group versus a Facebook group versus this versus that? That's not going to be the defining factor of whether you can build a business, a community or not. It's not. It's a vehicle. So if people love it, if they like being there, if it's something that's a part of their routine, their life, it doesn't really fucking matter whether it's WhatsApp or Facebook. That's not going to make or break it. So yeah, that's what I would say to that question.
Fantastic. And that, ladies and gents, brings us to the end and the podcast today. It's pleasant. Any final thoughts before we shuffle over to Instagram to do a live there on how to get online clients from the commercial gym that you're working in? Yeah.
Nope. Bye.
Bye, everyone.